This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Always a pleasure to welcome in the great E.J. Raddick from NHL Now, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And you know what? Michael Kay was listening to the recording last Monday, and I didn't say the great E.J. Raddick, and he wanted to know if we had a falling out. And I said, no, I just didn't get around to doing it, but that's why I wanted to accentuate it today.
Well, I know that Michael enjoys it when you do refer to me, and rightfully so, by the way. To be perfectly honest with you. I mean, in the past, I've been more humble, but I think now as I'm moving on in years, there's no reason for that anymore.
No,
I mean, just let's call it what it is. You're great, you're great.
That's it.
So, thank you.
Why mince words when you just put it out there?
Acknowledging what's out there to the audience as well as Michael.
Some hot teams coming back down to earth, right? Carolina's lost four in a row. Buffalo's lost four in a row. Vancouver three straight. So is this just a case of...
Boston's had some struggles, recently, even though they're still atop. You're right. There's a lot of teams that have kind of floated back down to earth a little bit in the last couple of weeks here.
What about, I guess Carolina's the one that maybe, because listen, Buffalo didn't make the playoffs last year, Vancouver didn't make the playoffs last year, Carolina went to the conference final last year, and they've got a history of disappearing for a decade and then making a run, but then they go on this toot to start the season, you think, all right, this isn't your same old Hurricanes, but, I mean, they grossly outplay the Rangers and probably deserved a better fate. Hank just stood on his head on Thursday. But the loss to the Devils, who came in there limping, this just seems to be probably some things to be a little concerned there with this four-game slide.
Yeah, I would say so because, I mean, losing to the Ottawa Senators, even though the Ottawa Senators have been pesky. I mean, listen.
I saw Monday beat up on the Rangers 5-1.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you know what's funny about the Senators? Historically, they always play well at Madison Square Garden, at least anecdotally for me. I don't know what the actual number is, but it seems like the Senators come into Madison Square Garden in any circumstance, and they always seem to find a way to play well. But, the Canes, it's a little bit of struggle right now. And, maybe it's a little bit, you come into the season after last year and everybody's revved up and, the fans and the whole thing get off to a good start. And then you settle into that 82-game schedule and you have to play. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes have to play a certain way every night to be successful, and it's not easy. And I think that's what we're seeing. There's a lot of parity in this league, and, I think that we're going to see teams have, like, ups and downs in their seasons because it's very, very close, and you can get on a run where you win three or four in a row and you're feeling good about yourself, and the next thing you know, it gets away from you, and now you lost three in a row. So, but if I'd be concerned, about Carolina right now because the losses haven't been good, and you're right. The game against the Rangers, they probably deserved a better fate, but they've got to get back on track. They're at home tonight against the Ottawa Senators. That's kind of a must-win type of situation for them to get back on track.
And Philly's bounced back. We had conversation about the goaltending completely going south, and that was a nice win against Boston. They blew the two-goal lead in the third period, but were able to get that victory in the shootout. Now they've won four in a row in seven of their last 10.
Yeah, they're playing a little bit better hockey right now, and like to me, it all goes back to that goaltending. It's like when the goaltending was sideways a little bit with Carter Hart, and they were really having to work Brian Elliott more. It was a struggle. Carter Hart's back in and been playing a little bit better, and all of a sudden now, the Philadelphia Flyers are having more success. So, we'll see. Again, it's the same thing as the Hurricanes, right? I mean, it's the same team for all these teams. The parity in this league is at a pretty high level right now, and you've got to be ready to play night after night after night. They've got the Capitals coming up on Wednesday. That's not going to be easy. The Caps have been, I think for my money, probably the best team in the league right now. And then they travel into Ottawa. We just talked about them, and then they get the Islanders on the second of a back-to-back. So the Flyers, they just have to try to keep finding ways to win, and hopefully, the goaltending is going to continue to hold up where Hart can, play two out of every three games and play well.
Well, what's the latest on Sid? I know he's not going to play tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like some kind of foot injury he got tangled up on the wall, then he got hit with a shot. So it's hard to know exactly, which is which. But, for the Penguins, hopefully they can get him back soon. I mean, the good news is Malkin is healthy right now. So, when Sid is out, Malkin usually steps up. Just like when Malkin is out, Sid usually steps up. So there's still a problem for teams playing against them, but we'll have to keep an eye on that. As far as we know, they're still waiting to see, what the feel is, what the prognosis is for anything beyond, their next game.
And Edmonton kind of dipped down there. Remember when they had that that shutout loss to Winnipeg. Remember we talked about that one. Eventually, yeah. Winnipeg won the shootout, and then they kind of just struggled. They got shut out the next time they played. But, you know, they're kind of back. They won a couple in a row, and they're in first place in the Pacific. Is it real?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I liked about their game in Anaheim last night is, like, you know, McDavid scores this crazy goal, and he just races down the ice, and he's on one knee, and he gets up, and he scores. And, you know, everybody will look at the offensive end of that goal and be like, wow, you know, this is McDavid. He's unbelievable. But the thing that I loved about that goal when you run it back, and we're going to talk a little bit about it today on our show, is it's a 4-2 game they're leading in the third period. He's right in front of the goal. He's right in front at the top of his crease where the center should be when a puck is behind the net. He doesn't cheat. He doesn't get above the puck. He mirrors the puck in the corner. When the puck moves ahead, he takes off. And then he's able just to do things that only Connor McDavid can do. So for me, that's the biggest thing when we think about the Oilers. Are their star players bought in to play in the 200-foot game? And while I don't know if we're ready to say Selke trophy for McDavid or Dreisaitl,
right.
I think we're ready to say they're more committed to play in their own end and trying to play the right way, as you hear coaches talk about all the time. And because of that, the team, the guys behind them on the bench, what choice do they have when their top players are doing that? They have to follow suit. If you play that way, you have more of a chance. It's about little things and little details in your game. And when you play that way, you have more of a chance to win. And the goaltenders between Koskinen and Smith have played pretty well so far. And the reason they're playing well is because the team is playing better in the defensive zone and giving those guys a chance to have success on most nights. So it's a total package going all the way through. But on that McDavid goal last night, it really stood out to me how much more they are committed to play the 200-foot game, and that's what makes a difference in this league.
But that's the secret sauce, right? To be able to figure out a way to play defensively, but also not have it come at the expense of offense. We saw it for years with Ovechkin, right? Like Ovechkin, you know, didn't commit to defense, and then he would score a bunch of goals. Then he would commit to defense, and then he scored 33 goals, and now he kind of found it, you know, his groove. That's what's so difficult to do. How do I stay defensively responsible, but yet still produce offensively?
Yeah, like when you don't have the puck, how do you play when you don't have the puck? And for the center, it's usually more important, or the F1 back in the zone, which is usually the center. I mean, a little bit less so for the wingers, but still, if they're cheating out and, you know, over the blue line and too far away and the gap gets too big, and all of a sudden you're a team that's vulnerable. And so to win in this league, you've got to be able to commit to playing in all three zones. And I think that Dave Tippett has done a nice job in getting that message across to these guys. And I think they've had some good coaches there before who tried to give that message as well. I mean, Todd McFarlane and Ken Hitchcock, I'm sure, had the same message for these guys. But maybe they've just reached a point in their careers, McDavid, and particularly McDavid and Dreisaitl as well, that you know, they're ready for that next step and for that message. You know, I mean, that's why we celebrate Sidney Crosby so much and why he's had so much success. He's won 3 Stanley Cups, a couple of gold medals. But in particular in the Stanley Cup wins, I mean, his commitment to playing the 200-foot game makes a difference for that team every night.
Anything really surprising to you? Anything that would be overly concerning to you as we now get closer and closer to that, you know, Thanksgiving kind of line that we always talk about? It's not, we're not that far away from it, right? So
yeah.
Anything that, where as we get deeper into November, you say, you know what, this is sustainable, or this is something that really has to be a concern?
Well, I mean, there's some signs of life for some teams. I mean, San Jose has won 3 in a row, albeit in a kind of an odd manner, because they played against Minnesota, I believe it was on Thursday night last week.
Yeah, with a 4-goal first.
I mean, yeah, they had a big lead, and then they literally just fell apart in the third period and almost blew the game, and they won it 6-5. I think they had a really good performance against Nashville to win 2-1 at home on Saturday night. They were in the midst of a busy home schedule. Between now and the end of the calendar year, I mean, they play most of their games, a great number of them at home. I think it's something like 22 out of 30 or something like that. So it's a window where they have to be successful on home ice. And, you know, they have won 3 in a row, so there's some signs of life. In the East, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, it's been a little bit of a struggle so far. They go over to Sweden for the Global Series games, and they win a pair of games against Buffalo. So, again, some signs of life that the you know, that the Tampa Bay Lightning are finding their way. I mean, I'm a little bit more dialed in on Tampa. I think they're going to figure it out. San Jose, I'm not so sure, but you got to give them credit. They've won 3 games in a row, and you know, kind of inching their way back up. You know, at least they're out of the basement in the Pacific.
Right.
And, you know, I would believe they're 6 points out of a playoff spot right now as we speak. So it's not the end of the world. But they've got to continue and build on that somehow, which I'm not so sure they can do, but we'll see.
Oh, you wanted to get some tweets in?
Let's go. Let's bring out the tweet.
All right. Sam Diaz says, gentlemen, what's more surprising so far this season, how much the Devils are struggling or how well the Islanders are playing?
More surprising. I don't know. Maybe the way the Islanders are playing, just because I think it's hard to do what they did last year and, you know, and to really be that committed to playing, you know, that structure, that system, game after game after game. And you look at them, they had the 10-game winning streak and had a tough loss to the Penguins in overtime, but they ended up coming back and getting another win against the Florida Panthers on Saturday afternoon at the Barclays Center. So I would say that's probably the more surprising thing, just because it's harder to be good consistently in this league and to defend as well as they do. I mean, Thomas Greiss has a 942 save percentage. 942. I mean, he has played really, really well, and the team in front of him is playing well. And also, you know, Varlamov has played pretty well when they've asked him to be in there. So I think that's it. The Devils, I mean, they're still a rebuilding team. They added some name recognition to their group in the offseason, but still I figured there would be a bubble team at best. I had them as a bubble out, and I think that's where they're going to end up. So, you know, I'm not all that surprised, but, you know, I think I am a little bit surprised that the Islanders continue to play so well. And I got to give Barry Trotz and that whole group in that dressing room, all those players, a lot of credit because they really believe in what they're doing and they come to play every night.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Chris says, hey, guys, on Thursday, Claude Giroux joined Crosby, Kane, and Ovechkin as the only players in the last decade to reach 700 points. Therefore, is Giroux a Hall of Famer? If not, is the Stanley Cup what he needs to solidify it?
Well, I mean, I think, boy, that's going to be one of those ones as we watch going forward the rest of his career, where it goes. I mean, certainly if he wins the Stanley Cup, that would give him another, you know, piece to the resume as a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's pretty darn close. I mean, that's, you know, I think there's time. There's time to be played out in his career still. But, you know, he's been a great player in this league, and I guess we all have our different feelings about what a Hall of Famer is. But he's pretty darn close. He'll be in the conversation. I'll be curious to see how things continue to unfold for him in the next several years.
So hear me out on this because
okay, yeah, I'm hearing it.
I don't think you have to win a Stanley Cup. But I think by not winning a Stanley Cup and only making that one run in 2010, that's when he went to the Stanley Cup final. I'm just looking at his resume here. Played 23 playoff games, 11 the next year, 10, then no playoffs for 2 years, 7 games, then no playoffs, 6 games, no playoffs, 6 games, no playoffs. It's not so much the cup. It's this because he hasn't won, there isn't anything like truly on his resume that can help him get into the Hall of Fame, right? Like, so, like Kane, you think of the goal he scored against the Flyers to win the Stanley Cup, or Crosby, you start thinking about the golden goal in the Olympics, you think about those runs in the playoffs. But, so, can a guy not winning a Stanley Cup still make it to the Hall of Fame? Sure. But does it damage his resume that most of what he's accomplished is more thought about in the regular season? Because it's really just that one postseason, right? He had 10 goals, 11 assists, 21 points. That was a phenomenal playoff run, but that's been it. So that's probably what damages him more. Because, no, I don't just by the naked eye, EJ, I don't put him with Kane, Ovechkin, and Crosby. I don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the guy's asking about the Hall of Fame, so I don't know if he's asking us to compare him to those guys.
But he's one of only 4 guys to do it in this decade, right? So there's clearly that separation between those three and him.
I think your point is correct, is that when you don't play on the biggest stage often, your stock is never going to be quite as high because you're not in those moments. And it's not like he is a tennis player that is advancing through, a major and doesn't get there. That's pretty obvious. The other guys have beaten you over and over. He's in a team sport where so much is dependent upon, you know, the goaltender. Like, if they would have had better goaltending in 2010, they might have won the Stanley Cup. I mean, that was a battle that year. I mean, it was a war of attrition in goal. I mean, it was, what was it, Antti Niemi was was in goal for Chicago, I think, at that time. And, you know, he wasn't very good. And Philadelphia had some injury issues there. They had Leighton was in there. And then Brian Boucher had been hurt. I don't know if he came back and played even in the final, but he was very injured at that point. And, I mean, there was some real challenges for the goaltender, for the, you know, for goaltending in Philadelphia in that year and in other years as well. So that's kind of hurt the Flyers.
It has.
So now they have Carter Hart, you know, and it looks like he's going to be a guy that can be a good goaltender for this team. Let's see how they do this year. Let's see how they do in the next couple of years. And I think he's one of those guys that's kind of like TBA at this point. We're not really sure. We got to see a more full body of work. Like, you know, Ovechkin has done what he's done. It's a no brainer. Crosby, it's a no brainer. Kane, it's a no brainer. He's won three cups. And he's been a high scorer, and he's won individual awards, and he's done all kinds of things in his career. So, you know, for Claude Giroux, I think he's been an excellent player.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I think the jury's still out, and there's time for him to still, you know, be part of something.
Sure.
Where he can take his game to a different level at a big moment and really solidify his resume in that regard. But, you know, for right now, I think, knowing Claude a little bit, I think he's just concerned about winning today and not really that, you know, concerned about, you know, whether or not he's someone that should be in the Hall of Fame, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And just looking at the individual, the most goals he ever scored was 34, the most points. The only time he was over 100 was a couple of years ago when he could have very easily won the Hart Trophy. Had 102 points.
That's right, yes.
So,
and, you know, the 100-point mark is much different now. As we know from, like, in the 80s and early 90s, right, it's hard to get 100 points now. Not a lot of guys get it. There was a time, you know, back in the 80s when if you had 140 points, you were, like, 10th in scoring.
You know? You're right. Absolutely.
Dennis Brook, I think, had 160 points one year. I mean, something crazy. So it's, you know, it's a different era, and it's certainly hard to score 100 points now. He's a great player.
Very good, very good player.
I would just say that he's got a, you know, there's still time for him to, there's time for us to see how the rest of his career plays out.
I'm going to combine a couple of tweets because they're basically about the same thing. Steve and Zach concerned about the Rangers' defense, and when do we start blaming coaching? Zach specifically calls out Lindy Ruff, who is a holdover from the previous regime. He's obviously in charge of the blue line. Just my two cents before you chime in. I mean, you got a lot of young kids on there. Obviously, they're thinking offensive. You look at the way D'Angelo has played, Shea has played. He was a healthy scratch the other day. I don't know. Is it coaching? Are they too young? Should they be better defensively than they are?
I would say this, that the Rangers, I look at the standings today. I mean, the Rangers are 7-6-2, so really it's kind of 7-8 with those overtime losses or shootout losses. So, I mean, I think that's pretty good for what I thought of their team this year. I mean, they're a rebuilding team still. I mean, yeah, they added Panarin, they added Trouba, those are some high-end players, but they're playing a lot of young players. They're playing a couple of guys on defense that are very, very young. I mean, Fox is a rookie, right? They had Lindgren played a little bit now. He's a guy that hasn't had much experience, a rookie still. Hayek is a rookie still. I mean, played a little bit last year. They've been, you know, Mark Stahl has been injured and out of the lineup. People can say what they want about him, but he's a real experienced player and a good defender. Tony D'Angelo is, you know, he's kind of an offensive guy. You know, he's a puck mover. Those are the guys that, you know, you ask them to do a certain thing for your team. You're not always, you're hoping they defend well, but they're not, that's not their strong suit. So, I don't think it's a coaching thing. I just think it's a lot of inexperience back there. And, you know, maybe could they find somebody that they feel that we feel is could do a better job with that group of young defensemen? Perhaps. But I think it's way too early to make that assessment. I just think they've got a lot of young defensemen on
there. Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. And that's why you have the inconsistency. Listen, when you have seven guys in your lineup that are 21 or younger, you know, to be above 500, they are what I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. And sometimes you slip away from the rebuild when you think about, oh, they went out and traded for Trouba and they signed Panarin, that all of a sudden now they were just going to be instantly a playoff team. There's still a lot of things that have to be put together there. Clearly, Panarin's a special player. Trouba, I think, is a very good player too. But there's a lot, adding a couple of players here or there, there's a lot of work still yet to be done here
with
this team.
It.
So I think people need to just be a little bit more patient. But you knew that was going to happen, right? It's New York. So they were cool for a while, but now it's like I really thought that when JD came and the Panarin signing, and then obviously with the Trouba, that might shake the confidence a little bit of the fan base with the rebuild. But I think trying to ignore that, they still are moving in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we're way early in this process. And, you know, let's face it, their best player, Mika Zibanejad, has missed, what, six or seven games?
That's a good point, too. I mean, not that he's their best player by far, but he was having their best season by far in the beginning of the year.
Yeah. I mean, that's a challenge for them right now, playing without their number one center. So, it's going to take time. You know, no one was looking at that roster and saying, hey, this is going to be a Stanley Cup team this year. I mean, this is a team that's still rebuilding, that's added some really nice pieces, and we have to see. You know, like, Kako is going to be a really good player, and he's made some real strides forward, so we're not worried about him. But, you know, you wonder, where's Adam Fox? What's he going to be as a National Hockey League player?
I like what I see far.
Yeah, so far so good, but, like, where is he going to be over time? Like, hey, you know, Hayek, where is he going to be in the big picture? Is Ryan Lindgren figured this thing at all down the road? Is Tony D'Angelo someone that, you know, you can have, he can be on a winning team? Or is he, you know, just a transient player that's helping you now, but when you get better, you know, you're going to have somebody different? I mean, these are all things we're going to see over time for this franchise.
Well, the one guy that I would be concerned about would be Elias Anderson. That's the one guy where I say maybe that's not working. He's stuck on the fourth line. He's playing minuscule minutes. I just wonder, is he someone that is long for this team? I don't know. It's, you know, JD's not married to him. He didn't draft him. I mean, at this point, and I keep thinking about what Ken Hitchcock said way back in the day about Nikolaj Zverev. We talked about this on NHL Live, where I got a young kid. I can't play him on the top lines because he can't handle himself going up against the best players in the league. If I stick him on the fourth line, he's not going to get any minutes and play with guys that can make him better. So is that the problem with Elias Anderson? When you're playing with, you know, McKeag and Haley and Smith, is that sapping him of his offensive ability? But I don't see anything that makes me think he can play in the top three lines.
Yeah, I mean, the problem for Elias Anderson, he was drafted seventh overall. And so there's the weight of expectations on a player like that, you know, maybe was drafted higher than he should have been. Hard to say. I mean, I haven't really sat down with tape and looked at him closely, but I would, based on his, you know, his numbers, which are not big-time numbers with this team, you know, maybe he'd be better off in Hartford playing there and continuing to grow and trying to find his way. The problem is he's the seventh overall pick a couple of years ago. Those players are supposed to play in the National Hockey League. And, you know, so an organization has to make a hard decision there. And the player has to be willing to understand the path in which he has to travel to get to where he wants to go, right? I mean, for Elias Anderson, as a seventh overall pick, he looks at others around him and figures, oh, I should be in the league and I should be getting, you know, I should be having a role. And yet here, maybe he is just not ready for that circumstance. So maybe he needs to be back in Hartford working on this game and trying to get better. So, or, you know, maybe he needs to go back over to Sweden and play in the Swedish Elite League for a couple of years.
Maybe.
Figure it out that way. So time will tell, but I think the bigger problem for Elias more than anything is that he just was a very high draft pick. And he hasn't played to the level of expectations yet. And so that is going to be something that's going to dog him. And he's going to have to deal with that. I mean, the players nowadays, they all know what's going on. They understand the circumstances they're in. And it does make it difficult. I mean, Pavel Zacha is in a little bit of a similar situation.
Yeah, you're right.
Devils. And, like, I think he's kind of finding his way a little bit more. But I don't think, you know, Pavel Zacha may morph into, like, a third center in the NHL. You know, as time goes on, a big-bodied third center type player, as opposed to what they thought that he might be when they drafted him. So time will tell. I don't know how it's going to play out for him, but when these guys get drafted high and they don't jump out of the gate, so to speak, in their NHL careers, teams lose patience with them. I mean, we've seen Dylan Strome got moved. There was a whole bunch of guys that have been, you know, in that same window, they got moved, and some of them have benefited from other opportunities. Some of them haven't.
Ryan Strome is a perfect example, right? I mean, he's now a top line center with the Rangers. He obviously didn't live up to expectations, and with the Islanders, where did they pick him? Sixth, fifth?
Yeah, he was a high draft pick.
You know, and then Edmonton, he tried there, and now I think he's a very good player. He's not like worthy of a top five pick talent wise, but he's a very good player.
Yeah, and it's taking time for him, and you know, so that's the way it plays out, and we'll see how it goes with Elias Anderson. But I think, you know, looking at his numbers right now and the minutes he's getting, he'd probably be better playing somewhere else, whether it be at Hartford or in Stewart.
I agree.
He'd be playing more and getting better and working on his game, and you know, but the Rangers, they have to make those decisions, and the player has to make those decisions as time goes forward.
All right, man, I'll let you go. It's been a long day for you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, Donnie, it's always a pleasure to be with the great Dominic.
And we'll try this again on Monday.
We will.
All right, buddy. I can't wait to see you at the rink. Hopefully you'll be at some Ranger games soon.
I hope so. Yeah, I got to get over there. So,
all right, buddy. Soon. I'll see you soon.
Bye.
That is the great E.J. Raddick. And if this is not your fill, you can go to television, NHL Network, between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time and watch NHL Now. Just a couple of games on the slate tonight. Coyotes and the Capitals from Washington. Antti Raanta is going to make the start for Arizona there. And that's at 7 o'clock. And also at 7, the Senators and the Hurricanes. Hurricanes struggling, 4 straight losses. One of those losses to Ottawa. So we'll see if they can bounce back and get a win there. Give Ottawa credit. They're not a very good team, but they come to play. And in this league, when you come to play, it gives you every chance to win. Want to hear from me? We didn't get to a lot of the tweets because we had a lot of conversation, but we'll get to more of them coming up. Wednesday will be our next podcast. We'll talk to Leah Hextall, her weekly spot coming up on Wednesday. Get her thoughts on the Don Cherry thing because she's right up there in Canada. So I'm sure she'll have some thoughts on that and kind of preview all the games that were played coming up on Wednesday and then recap the games that were played today and on Tuesday. So Leah will join us coming up on Wednesday. Want to get in touch with me? The best way to do that is on Twitter at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. This was fun. Back with you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.